This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO at the LaSalle Network. Visit LaSalle Network, actually thelasallenetwork.com. Tom, you're good, right?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
You always say you're doing great. I wonder if you're the kind of person where if I said, how you doing, and you weren't doing great, you would say, I'm not so good, and then you'd tell me all about it.
I would tell you all about it. I wouldn't just do it in passing.
It's the problem with that question. People really don't want to know how you're doing. They just want to get through this introductory part. Somebody did a study recently, and it was about business, and they said, here are the wrong things to say, and how are you doing is one of them. All of these throwaway introductory lines and half sentences, and they said, better that we do this. I thought it was drilling down a little too deep, to be honest with you.
I think there's a happy medium. I tell you, and there's what you say to somebody that you work with, and then there's somebody saying, who's just an external associate, right? So when I have my staff and my teammates in the company and I'm walking by them, I've actually altered that over probably 4 or 5 years ago. And I don't say, how's it going? I say, what are you working on?
Oh, now there you go. And is that you kicking them in the ass gently? Or do they see that as just a sort of introductory hello?
No, they see it as, oh, there's an answer here. And it's not objective.
Good. Right. That is actually a pleasantly probing, if you will. Pete just handed me it. The article is titled, Stop Asking How Are You? Harvard researchers say this is what successful people do when making small talk. And then they have all sorts of rubrics and questions and ways to conduct business in the office more efficiently and more almost honestly, which leads to what you're talking about. As a company, what should you consider before hiring a former employee? What does that process look like if you're hiring somebody back? A lot of folks are probably thinking about that.
Well, it's called a boomerang, right? You leave a company and you come back, and the real question is, why did the person leave? And what are they saying when they come back? And this, you know, topic or buzzword of authenticity probably gets overused because people really genuinely aren't that authentic, especially in business. I think it's what separates from their true successful ones. But when somebody leaves, they leave for a reason. Either they didn't like their manager, they got more money, working from home, what have you. And what's going on now, and my guess is will continue over the next few months, if not longer, is some periodic layoffs from different companies. And I'm hoping that people in general don't have so much arrogance that they don't contemplate going back to any company they worked at. If you liked it and you left for the idea of more money or what have you, and it ended up not being that way, have humility. Go back. You have a lot of value to go returning to that company.
Really? So you think candor won't kill you there, huh? Yeah, I thought I'd like it more. I thought I'd make more money. It wasn't as good as I thought. So you're my safe date, if you will, my safe school.
No, I don't know if it's a safe date. I think it's a company saying it's great for a company. And I don't understand companies that don't rehire people. If you have an employee that leaves and then comes back and says the grass wasn't greener, you have no better retention tool than that, right? A company should hire everybody back who was good. And then they're internally saying, it's not good out there. This is where it's safe. Stay here. It's the best retention tool you can have, and every company should do it. And the employee, whenever I'm interviewing somebody, I'll always say to them, have you ever gone, what was your favorite job that you ever had? And they'll say X, Y, or Z. And I'll go, have you ever gone back and said, is there any role open for me here? And when they say, yeah, I would never go back, new beginnings, it lacks a sense of humility that's saying, this isn't like going back to date your high school girlfriend or something. This is your career. And if you were great at a company, you were happy there, there's nothing wrong with going back and trying to find lightning in a bottle twice.
Boy, that's all the more reason not to burn bridges on your way out the door, right?
Isn't that the truth? And especially when you don't, you know, listen, when the economy was going like a bat out of hell, it made sense to go and take every opportunity you could. But the world's in a real different place and will be for the next, you know, 6 to 36 months. You know, we don't know. And leave on good terms. Stay in touch with people not just your coworkers, but managers. And if something, if you, people make mistakes. This isn't politics where you have to pretend like you never make a mistake. You can go back in time in your career and say, I wish I didn't leave. I want to come back, because every employer is excited about that.
Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Okay, Tom, we'll talk next week. Thanks for your time.
Stay healthy, John.
Philip Weiss joins us regularly on the Wintrust Business Lunch from Seyfarth at Work. Philip, how can birthdays go wrong? What are you even talking about here?
Yeah, you'd think that there's no answer to that question that would make sense to anybody, but the reality is, in the workplace at least, birthdays can run off the rails. And what's been fascinating of late is birthdays in the office really was something of a lost tradition during much of COVID. With people coming back, with bosses looking to reinvigorate older traditions, the office birthday party is kind of a reclaimed ritual. But companies aren't always thinking about the best ways to set up the birthdays or what to warn employees to do and not do. So we're actually seeing a spate of recent legal cases or complaints from birthdays that were mishandled. And it's largely about how people treat each other, how they celebrate each other, and in some cases, the company compelling people to participate in their own birthday party. So it's a range of risks, but we're seeing it come from various industries.
Give me an example.
So one, which we had seen in years past and is really coming back to haunt companies, John, is what we would call the clever card turning into a legally questionable decision. In many cases, people like to make fun of one's age. And among family and friends, that's not necessarily a problem. But in the workplace, given that age is a protected category, overemphasizing age can raise real legal red flags. So, for example, one of a client came to us because the people at their birthday were feting a gentleman who was in his mid-60s. They gave him gifts wrapped in tombstone-shaped boxes. Virtually every card had a reference to the vultures circling overhead, this guy being prepared to meet his pacemaker. In one case, a card had a forlorn-looking bloodhound on the front, and you opened it up, and it said, at your age, roll over and play dead is less of a trick and more of a major concern. So the entire theme was about how elderly this person was perceived by his coworkers. Interestingly, John, the cards were signed by everybody, supervisors, employees. People felt they had to sign the card. So when the case hit the trial stage, there was plenty of people to depose because everyone had participated. So that's one example where if someone later maybe gets demoted or terminated and they think it's about their age, at a minimum, they have evidence supporting this was a focus area.
Well, you don't like the card. Maybe your feelings got hurt. But what's the case about? What's the charge? This is a civil case. I wonder, what is he suing his employer for?
Well, that's a really good question. And sort of in support of your query and in a way your argument there, few cases, if any, are based on a birthday card or a gift. They may be inappropriate, but big money cases do not rely on one singular gift or card. However, as part of the evidence, they can be pretty powerful. So, for example, if you or I were let go and our managers had talked to us about how we're losing steam, not as much stamina, not keeping up, being a little dated. So there's enough out there that seems to indicate the reasons for our termination was our age. It's a real focus. That allows us to at least file the case in court. It's all those other pieces of evidence, like the offensive card, like the casket-shaped gifts, that can really boost the damages. And we have seen some cases in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And when juries were later interviewed, John, they said there was enough evidence that age was the reason, the rationale. But it was those offensive moments that really brought to light how offended this person was even before they were terminated. So it's not about the entire case, but it certainly boosts the damages in some of these instances.
1 minute left, Philip. Is it sometimes sexy cards or, you know, playful innuendo that gets people in trouble?
Yeah, and that's another great one. So beyond the whole clever, contentious cards, you have what we might call crass cakes, where and other items that are questionable on the racy side, where, for example, one client had an issue because the cake, the frosting of the cake, had one of these edible photo images of the birthday man scantily clad along with his girlfriend on a recent vacation. Unbeknownst to him, someone had grabbed the photo and reproduced it on the cake. Or risque limericks with a birthday theme etched in frosting has also been part of a sexual harassment case. So you're 100% right. Whether it's age, whether it's gender and sex conduct, the birthday at work is a time to maybe just say happy birthday and leave it at that.
We have a big cake in the conference, the common area here, and all the people who have a birthday that month are part of the mass email that says happy birthday to John and Jay and Pete, and then you go get some cake. Very simple, not too celebratory, but you know what? This is work. This isn't my cousin or my kids. It's just work. I wouldn't, anything more would seem to be a little unnecessary if you ask me.
Well, you would do more than fine as an attorney, because our mantra includes a lot of the same words. Simple, safe, but still celebratory. So you do want to have some barriers. You still want to support the person and be honoring them, but just be clear of the barrier topics and the overemphasis.
Find out more from Philip Weiss and Company. He's the president of Seyfarth at Work, Seyfarth, seyfarthatwork.com. Thanks, Philip. We'll talk again.
Great. Thanks for having me, John.
Ben Wink, a business insider. He's a markets and economy reporter there, co-authored a piece about the recovery. And I was a little confused by this, Ben, because on the one hand, you say that this recovery has been quicker than ever. But what's the purpose of a recovery if people aren't feeling it, if they're not recovered? So talk to me a little bit about what you wrote.
Yeah, so first off, thanks for having me on. I think what's really interesting about the situation we're in right now is that you have consumer sentiment at the lowest level, going back to the late 1970s, so lower than we saw back in 2008 and in the years after as we recovered from that, from the financial crisis. Yet Americans are still going out and spending at record levels. The jobs recovery is running three times faster than the jobs recovery from 2008 onward. And household finances rebounded extremely quickly. I mean, it took 5 years for finances to recover back to pre-crisis levels during the Great Recession. And we accomplished that in just half a year during the pandemic. And we've seen, you know, that's partially buoyed by stimulus and faster wage growth. But we've seen household finances continue to shoot up and only just started to moderate a bit. So, you know, it's this really interesting split where Americans are in the middle of, by, you know, judging by all the data, a really superlative economic recovery. They're just not feeling it. And you know, that all points to inflation. I mean, that's really the crux of the issue here.
Well, it makes you, but it still begs the question to me, then what does recovered mean? And by that, you mean they're employed and they're making money, right? Is that what recovery means?
I would say, yes, what you said, you know, they're employed, there are job opportunities available, there's intense demand for workers, they're making money, and, you know, their household balance sheets, their finances are back to the levels or around the levels that they had before the crisis. We didn't have the stimulus that we saw during the pandemic back in 2008. That was a major factor here. But for the most part, you know, most households saved a lot during lockdowns and then took in that stimulus. And that was a major factor in healing those balance sheets.
Makes you almost wonder what people would prefer. You want to go back to the way it was before, where inflation wasn't so high, but fewer people had jobs, you had less money in your pocket? Or do you want this version of it where you can get any job you want, you'll make a decent living, but you got to pay $5 for gas?
I think it's going to be something, you know, once we're, you know, hopefully we get out of the woods sooner than later. But, I think that's a very valid debate to have, because I think, you know, if you want to summarize it or simplify it even further, you know, post 2008, it was years and years of serious long-term unemployment for millions of Americans. And that has some really serious, effects on hireability, on your long-term wage potential. So, yeah. You know, that's definitely something to keep in mind. But like you mentioned, you know, it's not like the way we're living right now, or most people are living right now, is without challenge. Inflation is everywhere you shop and spend money. And we haven't really seen that cool down. So it could be around for quite a bit longer.
I was thinking yesterday, too, about people I know who are in their 50s and 60s and have their eye on a retirement date. And I wonder if now they're moving that to the right a little bit because they've lost 25% of the value of their 401k.
Right. Yeah. And that's another factor, too. You know, we've seen with this market volatility, especially yesterday, you know, just continuing what we've seen through a lot of this year. You know, it's sort of odd because we had a really transcendent market recovery after the initial hit from COVID-19 and stocks shooting back up to record levels, setting several record highs. Back through, I think it was late 2020 and 2021. So, and now we're kind of still we're back in the thick of it. And you could argue that, you know, this is almost as, you know, at least as far as volatility goes, it's getting close to what we saw, you know, after the initial lockdowns, just with so much uncertainty about how this fight against inflation will go.
Well, I'm of a mind that this thing is going to recover. It always does. The question is when and what's left in the wake, you know, how well did you survive it? And what are the long-term consequences for you? But all of that to say this, I'm trying to sugarcoat the bad news these days. It helps me get up in the morning anyway. And I wonder if you would say, Ben Wink, markets and economy reporter at Business Insider, that we are selling the downside more than is necessary. That is, sure, the interest rates are a problem and they're going to continue to go up because inflation is even higher still. But you do have a job. You are making money. If the economy is going to recover in the long term, these are paper losses. I mean, is everything I've said true so far?
You know, I consider myself an optimist. I think that is true. You know, especially when you look at the 2008 recession as a comparison. Now, those are two very, the circumstances are very different, right? That was a financial crisis. This is a pandemic. But, you know, in scope, the damage, the economic damage is quite similar. And that recovery was long. And there were so many things that we learned, you know, mistakes that we made and we learned from. And I think that's what we've seen over the past 2 years. You know, we went big with stimulus. The Fed left interest rates at zero for longer. And you could argue now that, you know, that allowed for inflation to get really high. But, you know, personally, I would rather see the labor market rebound like it did, you know, after 2020 than it did after 2008. I think that's so important. And making sure that people aren't unemployed for the long term, I think that's what is really damaging for an economic cycle, not just after a recession, but, you know, through the rest of that cycle, through the rest of the expansion.
Yeah, that's the question I've been begging lately. That is, okay, knowing what we know now, would you still do it the same way? Because back then, it was kind of all or nothing. Businesses had to close. You had to get money to people. And the inefficiency of that led to a surplus of cash in the market, that's for sure. And so here we are today with that being part of the problem. It's a real interesting story that you wrote, along with Madison Hoff. It's called The Pain the U.S. is Feeling from Inflation is the Opposite of the Recovery After 2008. It's by Ben Wink, and you can read more at businessinsider.com. Nice to talk to you today, Ben.
Likewise. Thanks for having me back.
1244 WGN. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Three Chicago Children's Hospitals are among the best in the U.S. The annual rankings by U.S. News & World Report puts Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago, University of Chicago Medicine Comer Children's Hospital, and Advocate Children's Hospital in Oak Lawn first, second, and third in Illinois. Nine of Lurie's pediatric specialties are ranked among the top 50 in the country. Comer was in the top 50 of hospitals nationwide in four specialties, including urology, cancer, gastroenterology, and neonatology. Advocate Children's placed in the top 50 hospitals nationwide and number 34 in cardiology and heart surgery. The James Beard Awards have returned after a two-year pause, and a Chicago chef has taken home a top prize. Eric Williams of Virtue Restaurant and Bar in Hyde Park won Best Chef in the Great Lakes region. The category includes chefs from Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan. Known as the Oscars for the food and beverage world, the James Beard Awards recognize exceptional talent in the culinary industry. I'm Steve Grithanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
And we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDrivesChicago.com. From the farm to your belly, today is National Bourbon Day. And remember,
all bourbon is whiskey, but not all whiskey is bourbon.
Jamie Walter, a farmer and co-founder of Whiskey Acres near DeKalb. And just like France has champagne, we have bourbon.
Which means it must be made in the United States. It must contain at least 51% corn.
Corn is something they knew a lot about, and just over 7 years ago, the Walters became one of the first family farms to get into the distillery business.
And we're still churning out high-quality premium bourbon and rye whiskeys primarily.
And here's a fun fact. The variety of corn affects the taste of the bourbon.
I compare it a little bit to a Cabernet Sauvignon grape and a Pinot Noir grape make very different flavored red wine. We have found through our research that there are certain varieties of both commercial corn, commercial yellow dent, and also certain varieties of specialty corns that make better flavored whiskeys.
How long between field and bottle?
5 years and 7 days. And I say that because the fermentation and distillation process itself takes about a week. But once we put it in a barrel to age, that is then tied up for usually about 5 years or more.
And all of your whiskey is homegrown, so to speak?
That's exactly right. If we don't grow it, we don't make it. You know, we like to tell people that great whiskey isn't made. It's grown. It starts here in the field.
And he says nothing goes to waste. Once the alcohol is cooked out of the corn and rye, it's still full of nutrients, and it either goes to nearby hog and cattle farms as feed, or it's put back into the soil. All of that's going on near DeKalb, and visitors are welcome.
Just south of DeKalb, so we're just right off of the interstate, easy to get to, an hour from downtown Chicago. We're open to the public Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of every weekend. We have a big visitor center. All ages are welcome, and it's a really fun, family-friendly event.
That's the business of food and bourbon on 720 WGN.
By the way, I just meant to mention to my friend Steve Alexander, he was talking about Whiskey Acres, the bourbon and whiskey brewing place, distilling place. We were scheduled to do a tour of that on Saturday. We were getting ready to load up the kids and move to Beverly. A couple of my friends said, hey, we got COVID, and so we didn't go. But it's a nice tour. It's a nice place. It's good beverage. Sounds like fun. I'll have to reschedule.
They'll be there when you're ready.
Yeah, no kidding. It's 12:52 on WGN. Amy Guth, have you done that? Have you toured Whiskey Acres Distillery?
I have not, but when you reschedule that, let me know too. Yeah. Steve Alexander and I will both go.
Well, I'm not buying. You guys make it sound like
wait a minute.
Not my company you're interested in. The IRS has boosted standard mileage deductions. Why and what's the story here?
That's right. So it's interesting that this change in mileage is coming kind of mid-year, right? Because that's going to kind of obviously probably make a lot of people kind of batty come tax time. But indeed, due to gas price increases, the standard mileage rate that is applying to, you know, any kind of eligible business trip, if you're a small business owner or something like that, that's going to go up by 4 cents. So it'll be 62.5 cents per mile. This doesn't happen often. It's only happened a couple of times since 2008. So in 2011 was the last one. And it was also right after a gas spike. It's kind of always the thing that triggers it.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's only 4 cents. Gas has doubled in the last 12 months. You'd think they'd go up more than 4 cents, but at least you get a little more of a deduction. Is that right? Amy just sort of faded there, didn't she? I'm not hearing her, and Pete, you aren't either. But that's the story, evidently. The next story I'm going to ask her about, let's see if she pops back in. Spotify forms a council to advise on safety versus censorship. Obviously, this is a story that has come up in the last year. on the Spotify platform. How is it that they monitor the content as they sign some big name and very popular people? Amy, are you still there? Oh, we'll put Amy on the phone then. Fair enough. Hey, Amy, let's talk about this Spotify story. What's going on there?
Okay, there we go. All right. So Spotify, if you recall a while back, there was a lot of consternation going on at Spotify over kind of this idea of like free speech versus not putting misinformation out in the world. So Spotify has formed a council to advise on safety versus censorship. At the moment, this all sprung up around Joe Rogan's podcast, and we saw some big artists sort of leaving the platform and all that. And we saw Spotify saying they didn't want to be, you know, policing material. They said, I don't want to be the content censor, but at the same time, they also published platform rules that said that certain kinds of content would not be allowed. So there was some conflict there, and there was a little bit of a kind of a almost contradiction going on. But they've added this council of people that are going to be really thinking through how they focus, how they can kind of do both, how they can allow creators to use their free speech, but also make sure that misinformation doesn't reach the podcast. So I think that's an interesting and important step, because a lot of people had a really strong feelings about Spotify. I'm sure you recall.
Well, the Rogan story was amazing. They paid him nine figures. He was $100 million signed, wasn't he?
That's right. That's exactly right. So it certainly behooves Spotify that they want to figure this out. And I think this is an interesting step. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because my guess is that a lot of other platforms could probably benefit from you know, this kind of think tank thinking through this sort of operation, because we see this on social media platforms. We see this kind of same push-pull everywhere.
Ford is recalling some Mustangs. Why, and what's the issue?
Yeah, so here's another blow to Ford kind of moving into that electric vehicle space. So they're now recalling 48,000, actually more than 48,000, of the Mustang Mach-E electric crossover vehicles. The concern is over a safety defect. Essentially, the high voltage contactor on the battery, it could fail, and the battery could start to lose power while it's in motion. I don't need to explain why that could be dangerous, right? So they have said that they are recalling those vehicles that have been sold in the U.S., and they have told dealers to not sell new ones. So if you have that vehicle, you may want to get in touch with your dealership and get that worked out, get that part replaced on the battery.
SpaceX is in the news. What's the latest there?
Yeah, so SpaceX, as another kind of big, you know, kerfuffle on the internet, of course, was Elon Musk saying, we're moving this operation to Texas. And so now the FAA has conducted this long-awaited assessment of the program in Texas and noted that SpaceX has to take several steps to mitigate some environmental concerns before they can get their launch license. And it's quite a few. It's about 75 actions. It's things like controlling biohazardous materials, it's limiting noise levels, protecting water resources around it. That area in Boca Chica, Texas, where the launch is, there's a lot of water right in that area, a lot of groundwater. So it's a lot of environmental protections there.
And that's Amy Guth. Amy, thanks for...
Sorry, losing my voice a little today.
You made it right to the finish line. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.